From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, veteran homeless advocate Jeff Kaczynski has been at the helm of the new San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing since last summer. And while nationally the homeless population is down by 14%, the city is facing growing numbers of homeless, up to an estimated nearly 7,000 just this year. We'll talk this hour with Kaczynski about what strides the city has made in addressing homelessness. Join us for Forum next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the Forum program. Jeff Kaczynski was appointed last summer to direct the new Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing for the City and County of San Francisco. We had him on just after he took the post when he outlined plans for more supportive housing, new navigation center shelters, and other initiatives. In November, San Francisco voters rejected a sales tax measure that would have raised more money for homeless services. But the city spends nearly $250 million a year on homelessness and is part of the San Francisco Homeless Project, a collaboration between KQED, the San Francisco Chronicle, and other media outlets. We invited Jeff Kaczynski back for a progress report, and welcome to the program. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael.
Well, let's talk about progress. We've reduced homelessness. We put more people in navigation centers, which I want to get into with you, because some of the people in navigation centers say they'd rather have housing than be in what they call a shelter rather than a navigation center. But there's still, I was reading an article by Randy Shaw in Beyond Crime. He said the people are still seeing the tents out there, despite what Mayor Lee said about getting them into navigation centers, despite what Proposition Q, Mark Farrell, put forward in terms of getting them into navigation centers and so forth. So let's get to the heart of this. I mean, the optics don't tell the whole story. People are seeing tents, but tents are being reduced.
That's right. One of the challenges with my job is that our failures are very visible, but our many successes are invisible. People aren't seeing the 100 individuals who we've helped move from tent encampments into nav centers and permanent housing since our department officially started on August 15th. They don't see the fact that we've opened up or will be opening 5 new affordable housing sites since the new department started, the fact that we opened a new nav center and we have 2 in the pipeline. And there's still a lot of work to do, but it is a challenge, and the optics are very difficult, no doubt, and people are understandably very frustrated.
And the politics are difficult, too. I mean, let's get to the heart of that. I mean, you've had some real, formidable challenges in that realm?
Yeah, there have been a number of challenges, but a number of successes as well. I'll point to the legislation that we worked on with Supervisor Campos around navigation centers. I thought was an excellent process. There have been challenges as well. And as I like to say, sometimes homeless people are used as the political red cape, if you will, especially during election seasons, and it creates some challenges. And what I'm really want to focus on is, we're developing a long-term strategy for the department, and our challenge is to be able to stand the strategy up and stay the course for a few years so that we can see some real progress.
Well, San Francisco has too few beds and supportive housing to house the homeless population. In fact, I believe the population has been moving upward, or certainly the population in general, that would include the homeless. But with Prop Q, which bans tents, what's the city doing to cope with the large influx of those who are moving from the tents?
So, the issue with tent encampments is a relatively new one, and it's relatively challenging. And what we've done is set up something called the Encampment Resolution Team. And our goal there is to try to address large encampments, 6 tents or more that have been there for a month or more. And we go in and we have a whole protocol that we've developed that has been very, very successful. And rather than squeezing the balloon, so to speak, and moving people from one part of the street to another part of the street, what we're doing is making sure that those folks get into a navigation center or shelter and hopefully into housing eventually. And then working with the San Francisco Police Department and Public Works to keep those encampments from reforming.
You interview these people. You actually set up intensive care management, and a lot of this is based on, I think most of it, on the encampments on a threat to public safety. There's a rating system, I know, behind this. But what about that argument? You hear it from a lot of homeless people. They don't want to go into navigation centers. They want housing.
You know, this is true, and that's quite a challenge. I think the reality of it is there are 7,000 homeless people in San Francisco on any given night. While we do have 6,200 units of permanent supportive housing for folks, only about 600 or 700 of those open up a year. We have 4,000 people sleeping on the streets on any given night and only about 1,500 shelter beds available for them. So certainly there's a resource issue, but there are things that we are and will continue to do to deal with these scarce resources that we have, and be happy to talk about those.
Let's talk first about the fact that, as I said in the introduction, San Francisco voters voted down J&K, which would have meant more revenue. And there's still federal money coming in. But also there's a question of what's going to happen with Donald Trump as the president of the United States for the homeless people, not only here but throughout the country. And have you taken advantage – I want to talk about revenue with you specifically, but have you taken advantage of the De Leon legislation? That's about $45 million. It's called No Place Like Home, state dollars.
Yeah, so No Place Like Home is actually going to be a total of almost $2 billion. $45 million of it will be used for helping folks who are homeless get onto SSI, supplemental income, to help people who are disabled. And the vast majority of it is going to be used to develop more permanent supportive housing, particularly focused on single adults with disabilities. I'm very hopeful that San Francisco will be able to bring in close to $120 million of funding through this program, and will help us build much-needed housing.
Since you mentioned SSIs, there's also been some real concern about people getting on SSI. There are a lot of people who are homeless who, out of embarrassment or because they have a drug or addiction problem, don't get SSI. It's actually a fairly difficult process that we go through in terms of establishing eligibility.
It is absolutely a challenge, but I do believe that San Francisco, particularly the Human Services Agency, does an outstanding job of helping individuals to apply for SSI. And as you said, it is a difficult process. It sometimes takes multiple tries, but HSA
– it's federal disability assistance we're talking about,
yes.
SSI. I should have said that. Please go ahead.
But we also have, you know, really wonderful nonprofit service providers who, especially those who are working with folks who are in permanent housing, they assess all of the residents. And if somebody is eligible for SSI, we'll work with them, and we'll work with them for as long as it takes for them to get on it. So we actually – could we do better? Absolutely. But I think we've done a very good job so far.
I'm reading up to a couple thousand eligible, really. Is that figure square?
I think that's an estimate, but that feels about right.
And I want to go in. There's so many things I want to take up with you, and I want to hear from our listeners too. So let me at this point give out the number. If you have some thoughts about the ongoing struggle with homelessness here in San Francisco, or for that matter beyond throughout the Bay Area, we'd certainly like to hear from you. Any thoughts you might have, any comments or questions, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. We invite you to do that. That number is 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to call us now at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. San Francisco has the fourth largest number of unaccompanied homeless youths, but the highest percentage of unsheltered homeless youths. That's according to a federal homeless report, which was released last month. Where do these kids come from, and what steps are you taking to address their particular needs?
Yeah, that's a great question. It is one of our biggest challenges, and it's an area where I feel we need to do better. The youth come from, you know, many of them come from San Francisco, and especially from the southeast part of the city. Young people who were born and raised here and for a variety of reasons end up on our streets. There are also youth who are coming from other parts of the country, escaping abusive situations. A very high percentage of them are LGBTQ youth who are coming here in hope of finding a more open and tolerant environment. And we have a number of new initiatives that we are launching with them. There's some great new organizations. I just want to give a shout out to a group called Taking It to the Streets that has done really excellent work up in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood, working with young people up there. At the Crossroads is another great organization, and of course Larkin Street, all of whom have really great services. But one thing that we've just applied for a federal grant and hope to be one of 10 cities that is going to receive funding to both help us develop a better system for working with homeless youth and then ultimately provide us some more resources to find various housing programs in this space.
If you've just joined us, we're talking to Jeff Kosicki, who is director of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing for the City and County of San Francisco, and we'll bring you, our listeners, into this shortly here. A lot needs to be done still, and you've been getting some high marks from a number of sources for your vision and what you see ahead and everything, but there are people who are you've been criticized too, even this early in the honeymoon phase, but there are people concerned about your support for safe injection sites for addicts and also for essentially what's called wet housing for alcoholics. So let's find out why you're behind those.
Sure. We'll just also want to kind of straighten the record out on this. So we were asked, our department was asked during a hearing about the navigation centers, whether or not we felt like there should be a safe injection navigation center or a alcohol management-focused navigation center, and we responded no. We don't believe navigation centers are the appropriate place for those types of medical interventions. We are supportive of and are exploring the possibility of creating wet housing or permanent supportive housing for chronic alcoholics in which we would help manage their alcohol use. The issue around safe injection sites really is an issue for our Department of Public Health. During that hearing, Director Barbara Garcia stated that she thought it was an idea worthy of continued exploration, but pointed out that there are legal challenges or legal issues related to supportive safe injection sites, both at the state and federal level, that would need to be explored and thought through. My own personal take on this is I'm in agreement with Director Garcia. It's an idea that's certainly worthy of exploration. There are many, many people using out on our streets. It's both disruptive to the communities, but more importantly, it's very unsafe for the individuals who are suffering from substance abuse disorders, and we need to continue to find new ways to better support them. But there are many, many issues and barriers to doing this, but San Francisco is always been on the forefront of new ideas around public health and social safety, and I'm sure we're going to continue looking for ways and finding ways to deal with this epidemic on our streets of drug use.
You need more revenue, as has been pretty much hinted at here, and not so much hinted at, intimated. But you also need more attorneys. With SSI, they're really helping through the process, people who can help through the process, and also what you just established in terms of some of the federal laws that are with respect to having places like safe injection sites and for addicts and so forth. I want to go to our callers. In fact, let me do that now, and I want to come back and talk to you about SROs and also talk to you about accountability with all the money that's being spent. And all the agencies that are there, $250 million being spent on homelessness. So let me go to our callers. Let's hear first from RJ. RJ, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. I currently live in permanent supportive housing that's federally subsidized, and I'm wondering what will happen in the Donald Trump administration, given that we're a sanctuary city, but also given that Ben Carson, the new head of HUD, may not be so supportive of permanent supportive housing.
Jeff?
Yeah, thank you for that question, RJ, and I want to assure you that your housing here in San Francisco is secure. We are aware of, many people have very similar concerns, and we have are working on contingency plans. Always, the city's always You know, we can never rely on federal and state and even local funding. We always need to be careful in our planning and our thinking about this. But, you know, I will say this. The federal government actually for the past 12 years has gotten much better on the issue of homelessness. And we're actually seeing that nationally with reductions in homelessness overall in many parts of the country and an embracing of this housing first model that was pioneered both in San Francisco and New York. I find it very difficult to believe that any administration is going to divert off of what's been a very productive path that actually, in many ways, started under President Bush.
RJ brought up Sanctuary City. Kurt writes, what is the impact of the Sanctuary City policy on homelessness? In other words, what percentage are unauthorized foreigners?
That is also a great question. You know, Mayor Lee has stated repeatedly his support for the fact that San Francisco is a sanctuary city. There's nearly 100 sanctuary cities around the country. And I find it hard to believe that all of those 100 cities, including Washington, D.C., are going to lose any federal funding. And as far as how many people would be affected, well, San Francisco, because we are a sanctuary city, we don't ask people about their immigration status. So we don't really know the answer to that question.
How about an answer to this question from Bridget, who says, I'm a business owner and my sales have been affected by the encampments. What does the city plan to do to help small businesses? My neighborhood is at 14th and Mission. It's been overrun with tents for over a year now. Why hasn't this area been addressed?
That's an excellent question, and I'm happy to report to you that we are currently – our encampment resolution team is in that part of the city right now. It is our plan to move folks who are in large tent encampments in the northeast part of the Mission into navigation centers. We hope to have that resolved actually in the next week or so.
And you saw Kevin Fagan's story on the cover of today's Chronicle about Division Street?
Yes. And I think that there were some challenges with how Division Street got handled. There were some lessons learned. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised by that story because Kevin wrote a great piece about the Encampment Resolution Team's first initiative in Islay Creek. I think it's easy to sort of point to six or seven people who had challenges who were at Division Street. But I'd also like to see a story about the, you know, 100 or so people that we've moved from Islas Creek and from an encampment in the Mission District and how well they have done since that has happened.
Let me go to more of your calls. John, join us. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is, how do we differentiate and gauge the services that are offered for people that become homeless in San Francisco or from here versus people that come to San Francisco to become homeless and utilize the services? I think many citizens in San Francisco worry that we're just a landing ground for a lot of people that want to come here to be taken care of.
So I know that that comes up very often, and I just want to share with you some facts that the last time that we did a census of the homeless population, or it's called the point in time count, we found that 29% of the individuals who we counted were homeless somewhere else before coming to San Francisco, and that 71% of the people were living in San Francisco before they became homeless. So most of the people who are homeless in San Francisco were living here prior. However, you know, almost a third of the folks coming from somewhere else is a fairly significant number. So I think there's a few things that we need to do. One is we need to start talking to the other Bay Area counties and start working on a regional solution and sharing data. And the other thing that we need to do is in San Francisco, and we're working on this right now, is to stand up our own data system. Right now we have 13 databases that track homeless services. We're trying to consolidate them all into one system and be able to have a better understanding of where folks are coming from and where they end up, and prioritizing people who have been homeless the longest and who are the sickest on our streets to make sure that our resources are going to the folks who need it the most.
Let me thank the caller, John. And this gets right to the question about something else that was raised in the Chronicle, saying that the city urgently needs to track effectiveness and efficiency of the nearly $250 million it spends annually on homelessness. You've said you want to put accountability measures in place. So how can that be accomplished? Because you've got all these disconnected city departments. You've got 76 private and nonprofits taking on the issue.
Well, I think Mayor Lee you know, had the vision to create this one department. So now all homeless programs are operating out of this new Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing that I have the honor of leading. And one of the main initiatives we're working on is something called the One System. It's the online navigation and entry system that will create a single database that will do a number of things. First of all, if you're homeless, you're no longer going to have to get into multiple lines and be assessed multiple times. You will be assessed once. You will be in our system. That data will be shared across providers to the extent that we can, you know, given regulations around people's privacy and such. And then we'll be able to in essence, air traffic control folks to the right place. That's also going to allow us to make sure or to monitor the work of our nonprofit partners, most of whom do excellent work, but we'll be able to see in real time how they're performing, how many times they've evicted somebody from supportive housing, how many times people who are in shelters have ended up in a better place when they've left. And we're very excited about this, but it is going to take some time. And I like to remind folks, homelessness was 40 years in the making, and it's going to take a few years for us to get this system fully operational. But once it does, I think it's going to revolutionize not only how we provide services to folks, but also the tools that we have to both hold our service partners as well as ourselves accountable.
And how much can you account for incoming influx of homeless?
You're projecting
more numbers coming in, aren't we?
We are, absolutely. So, again, because we haven't had a robust data system like this, it's difficult to project. We are making some assumptions right now based on – we do have data in – we have some bright spots in terms of our data collection, especially around homeless veterans. So we have very good data around homeless veterans, and we're using that to estimate what the inflow is that we can expect. We have great data around family homelessness as well. So we've developed an excellent model that allows us to test some of these assumptions and sort of say if our goal is to reduce street homelessness by 50%, we can plug some numbers and assumptions in and then have an understanding of what resources we're going to need to achieve that goal.
As long as we're talking about numbers, Bruce wants to know, if you compare the budget to the number of homeless people, how much per person is being spent each year?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So oftentimes people will read in the paper or hear that San Francisco spends $241 million a year on homelessness and we serve 7,000 people, and they divide those numbers, and I think it comes out to about $30,000 or $40,000 per person, and that's and people are very angry about that. And if it was true, I'd be angry too. So let me break down the numbers a little bit as to what we're actually
doing.
Hold
that thought, because we're coming up on a break, and
okay,
we're going to find out how those numbers break down, as well as talk about SROs, as I promised, and much more with our guest. And Jeff Kaczynski is here with us in studio. He's director of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing for the City and County of San Francisco. Do you mind being called Czar, or you have abrogated that title?
I mind very deeply.
That's what I thought. Okay. So we will not call you Czar, and we'll invite listeners not to call you Czar. In the meantime, we can hear from you on this. If you have thoughts, questions, or comments, join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. You can also go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Join the program. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're checking in this hour with San Francisco's top homeless official. Jeff Kaczynski is here with us in studio and veteran homeless advocate. And he's been at the helm of the new San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing for close to 6 months now. And while nationally, the homeless population is down by 14%, the city is facing growing numbers of homeless, up to an estimated nearly 7,000 this year. And as part of the San Francisco Homeless Project, we're talking with Jeff Kaczynski about what strides the city has made in solving or ameliorating the homeless problem. And we do welcome your involvement in the program. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Before we went to the break, we were going to crunch some numbers here with Jeff Kaczynski. But first, you wanted me to ask you why you don't like the title Czar?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think when I think of Czar, I think of either a vicious autocrat or a policy advisor who doesn't have any real authority over a particular issue. I am neither of those things. I'm a department head. I'm accountable to the mayor as well as the people of San Francisco to address the issue of homelessness. I do advise the mayor on policy issues related to homelessness, but also I have resources in my department. I'm responsible for a large number of programs and partnering with 70 nonprofit organizations to address the issue. So I prefer the title department head.
Okay, and now let's hear the numbers crunched, if you could.
Sure. So of the 241 million that folks think about, you know, that number is fairly accurate, but let's break it down. So 120 million of that is actually spent on housing over 8,000 people in permanent supportive housing. So half of my budget, over half of my budget is actually spent housing people. So then about $50 million of the $241 million is actually spent on medical services provided by the Department of Public Health. And the remaining $60 or $70 million is used to provide services to folks, outreach, shelter, transitional housing, rent subsidies, our Homeward Bound program. And we serve almost 12,000 people per year in those programs. So it's not as simple as taking $241 million and dividing it by 7,000. The numbers that we spend are much less than that. I would say on average, it's probably under $5,000 per year per person who touches our services.
I read a comment from a listener who says the top priority needs to be eliminating the negative effects of homelessness. We need a zero tolerance policy for littering, polluting, begging, sidewalk camping, sitting and lying, and the quality of life crimes caused by homeless criminals. Want to comment on that comment, Jeff?
Well, I don't believe that most homeless people are criminals. Believe that they are somebody's sons, somebody's daughters. These are our brothers and sisters and our neighbors who don't have a place to live. We absolutely have an obligation to them to help them find a safe place to be. But I also do agree that we have an obligation to the housed members of our community to provide clean neighborhoods, safe neighborhoods. I think that many departments, fire, police, public works, all have a role to play, and they do play and do great work in this area. Our department's job is to get folks, off of the streets and into housing and help them exit homelessness. But we all need to work together. And this is a very high priority for the mayor to make our streets cleaner and safer. And that's why the mayor directed us to address this issue. And it's why we started the encampment resolution team.
Here's Stan, who's kind of on point here. Stan, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. I want to follow up on the question from the woman who owns a business at 14th and Mission. I found that response to be completely inadequate and almost condescending. This is a woman who has put her capital at risk to run a business, a neighborhood in this city, which supports the tax base that pays the department head's salary, as well as provide services to these folks. And the response is, we've deployed the homeless encampment, whatever the bureaucratic term for it is. That's a stunning remark to me. I find that to be unbelievable, frankly. Is that the best response as a city we have?
Well, let me just and I'm sorry if my response sounded condescending, and let me be a little bit more clear. So the encampment resolution team's role is to go out into these neighborhoods where there are large encampments and to help those folks get into housing or into shelter. And then we work with the police and local businesses and local property owners and the Department of Public Works to make sure that the encampments are not reformed. And as I was mentioning, we happen to be working in that part of the city right now. And the person who asked that question will see some results in the next few weeks. It is our goal to clear large encampments out of that part of the city. That's where we're working right now. And then we work with the police and public works to clean up the area and make sure it doesn't reform. Once we're done in that part of the city, we're then going to be moving to a different location close to Mission Bay and addressing a large encampment there.
Let me thank Stan for the call. It's been said that it takes 4 weeks or more to get someone in a tent access to psychiatric or addiction services. Not too long?
Well, I think that it takes about 4 weeks for us to fully resolve an encampment, not necessarily That's not necessarily how long it takes to folks to get folks to psychiatric or substance abuse treatment. There is absolutely a wait, but what we're doing is going out to the encampments. Before we actually start working there, we're doing an assessment. We let the Department of Public Health know we believe that there are X number of people needing substance abuse or behavioral health services. They've been doing a great job finding slots for us so that we, when we're out working in that neighborhood, we're able to get those folks into the treatment that they need. And the rest of the folks, we generally are getting into navigation centers or helping them reunify with family members, either in San Francisco or in other parts of the country.
As I said earlier, Jeff, there are a lot of homeless people who have addressed the whole question of navigation centers, and some of them would prefer to have a roof over their head and prefer to be in housing in San Francisco. Has some good supportive housing in many people's minds, the so-called SROs. I mean, they were built for that purpose. But I'm sure you saw the investigative report that was done in the Chronicle that said that about 60% of those in supportive housing are facing all kinds of serious maintenance problems, vermin infestation, power outages, unreliable elevators. I mean, the list just goes on. It's a litany of lists. And it brings to mind, of course, what happened in the Crosby Hotel back in 2015, the tragedy when a woman was undiscovered dead for a couple of months. Now, I know that there's been about $700,000 that's gone into that hotel specifically, but you still obviously have SROs that are terribly unfit.
So I believe that the number is that 60% of the people living in supportive housing are in master leased housing,
right.
SROs, and some of them are old. Some of them are in better shape than others.
Some like a century in some cases.
Yes,
yeah.
And some of them do have problems, absolutely. But I will say the vast majority of them are very well run. We work with property owners who invest a fair amount of money to bring them both up to code and make them more aesthetically pleasing and habitable. But they are difficult to run with very old elevators.
Health-wide violations, leaky pipes. I mean, the list, like as I said, just keeps going on from what I've been reading.
Yeah, there are some, absolutely. But also remember, most of the SRO stock is not master leased by the city. There are people living in SROs that are privately owned, and they're paying out of pocket to live there. The city, I think, does a and my department and the staff that I work with do a very good job of monitoring the quality of the SROs. I think the Crosby was an unfortunate issue, and there were absolutely problems there. I mean, people do make mistakes, but if you went back to the Crosby now and took a look, you will see it is very well managed. It is very well maintained. Episcopal Community Services that ran the Crosby right out of the gate said, hey, we need to do better than this, and they have.
Well, they spent, as I said, $700,000, at least according to the last accounting I saw.
I believe the $700,000 was spent to rehab the building initially. I don't think they spent $700,000 in response to these complaints. I think there were some management issues that needed to be addressed.
Well, how much have they spent in response to these complaints? Because they've gone down. The violations have gone down and the complaints have gone down.
I'm not 100% sure how much has been spent since the complaint, but I do know the violations and the complaints have gone down, and a lot of that has to do with Episcopal Community Services, just hard work and improving the way that the building was being run.
They do good work indeed. Here's Carol, who wants to know, where can people's donations to help the homeless have the biggest impact?
That's a great question.
Episcopal Services?
I think Episcopal Community Services is a great organization, and I often, I'm asked this question, and I first ask folks, if you're interested, is in adult homelessness. I think Episcopal Community Services does great work. St. Vincent de Paul, there's so many organizations that are providing needed services around youth. Larkin Street, Taking It to the Streets is a great organization, as is At the Crossroads. And families, there's Hamilton Families, where I used to work, and Compass Family Services is a great organization, homeless prenatal program. There's so many. I encourage you to explore, decide which population you're interested in working with. Just go on to Google and look up those organizations. They're really outstanding. Another great place to get connected to and to learn more is Project Homeless Connect. And in fact, today at Bill Graham Center, there's a Project Homeless Connect where folks can go and volunteer and provide assistance to people who are on our streets in need of a variety of services.
I think, Amanda, can we put these on the website? Or we'll try to get them on the website for you if we can. In the meantime, let me get some more listener callers on here. Let me go to San Diego and welcome Mark. Mark, you're on.
Hi, this is Mark, newcomer. I was driving down 9th Street today, and I saw this huge modular box parked on 9th, which said MicroPad homeless housing on the top. It looks like it's being built by the private sector. So I was just curious if you think the private sector solutions are going to fit into the homeless housing discussion, or if it's going to be more of a kind of a strictly nonprofit arena.
No, that's a great question, and actually I've been in a number of meetings this week talking about the need to engage the private sector in developing supportive housing in partnership or in addition to the nonprofits. Community Housing Partnership and Strata is a great example of that. They are redeveloping the Civic Center Hotel and going to be turning that into a combination of both market rate housing as well as replacing the union hall, the plumbers union hall. They've been great partners in this as well. And then they're also building permanent supportive housing that Community Housing Partnership will operate. We need to do more of that. What you saw on 9th Street is from a company called Panoramic Interests. They are proposing developing these modular units that are actually made in China, and they're stacked up like Legos. We've been in discussions with them as well as other private developers looking at ways that we can partner with them to bring more units online, because we clearly have a huge gap and we need to be as creative and efficient as we can. And I think modular housing of some sort or another, or private sector involvement are absolutely things that we're exploring.
And let me thank the caller, Mark, and remind you that we're talking to Jeff Kaczynski, who's here with us in the KQED studios. He's director of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing for the City and County of San Francisco. Question from a listener named Natalie. What is the plan for when someone refuses offered services?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sometimes people will say, well, no one ever refuses services, and I think that that's a myth. But it is a minority of individuals. And normally there are folks who don't want to accept services, or people who are suffering from mental health issues and have a challenge really making decisions that are rational.
Yeah, in some instances, they don't want to go to the navigation centers, for example.
That's right.
I mean, I read one homeless woman who said, I can't deal with the people there.
So I think there's a couple of things we need to do. One is we need to improve our shelter and navigation center system. I think most people are very happy to go to the nav centers. They're smaller. There's fewer rules. There's very low barrier to entry. They're well designed and provide people a little bit more privacy and a better environment. We need to make it so that all of our shelters are welcoming and low barrier to entry. The other thing that we need to do, or that we do and need to do more of, is we need to do outreach with folks. I often talk about a gentleman in my neighborhood who I've been doing outreach with before I started this job. He is a young man. As far as I can tell, he isn't using alcohol or abusing substances. He's got some mental health challenges, and it took me about 6 months just to learn his first name. It takes time. We need to do outreach to these folks to try to encourage them and to develop a relationship with them. And that's why I often tell folks when they say, well, what can I do to help? One of the most important things people can do is just say hello to people who you see who are on the streets. It's people who see hundreds of people walk by them day after day after day develop a sadness and a shell around themselves, and they feel hurt. And it makes it harder for our outreach team to engage with them because they are so used to not dealing with folks. So, I ask people to be compassionate, to understand this is somebody's son or daughter and our neighbors. And just saying hello will make a huge difference, so that when our homeless outreach team goes out to talk to those folks, they're used to engaging with people.
I'm just reminded of Randy Shaw again, who's been on forum talking about homeless problem. He runs a homeless program in the Tenderloin, for those of you who don't know him, and was critical of Supervisor Campos for putting emphasis on the navigation centers as opposed to trying to find, again, actual housing. And I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Chirag, who writes, the city loves to have discussions about homelessness but refuses to address the issue in ways advocates want, homes.
Well, I would dispute that statement. San Francisco has 6,200 units of permanent housing for people who are homeless, more per capita than any other city in the country. I actually believe that, and we need to continue to do more of that. That's very important. Homelessness is solved by homes or people exiting homelessness. But we're also experimenting with things like temporary rent subsidies called rapid rehousing that have been very successful with families. The Homeward Bound program, which connects people to private to family members or friends in other parts of the country or other parts of the state. There's a great organization we also partner with called Miracle Messages that does this type of work as well. All of these things are important. We're not going to be able to just build our way out of this problem. But the other issue, I think, that in our efforts to want to actually solve the problem, we haven't paid enough attention to the symptoms of the problem. Shelters don't solve homelessness. They only solve the problem of sleep, which is not having a place to sleep is a symptom of not having a home to live in. And we need to have more places for people to sleep while we're trying to help them get into housing. And that was the idea behind the navigation centers, is to add more units of shelter, temporary housing for folks, so that we can reduce the very large unsheltered population on our streets.
They're essentially homeless shelters. I mean, non-traditional, but nevertheless homeless shelters and navigation centers. But the city's going to open 6 new ones within a couple of years?
We are going to certainly try to do that. And I think that's this can't be an either or. We can't say, well, we're only going to focus on housing or we're only going to focus on shelter. We need to do both. And we are going to try to open up 6 navigation centers. We have 2 open right now. One is being constructed as we speak. We have a 4th in the pipeline. So we're really just needing to find a pathway for the final 2.
Well, how successful have they been in your judgment? I mean, there are reports that people are staying there too long and that they're not creating space for new clients.
So I'm very happy with the outcome of the Navigation Center. But again, they're only going to be as successful placing folks into housing as housing becomes available. We've served about 1,000 people in Navigation Centers. The average length of stay, I believe, is just over 100 days. So far, about 70% of the folks who have gone into the Navigation Centers have exited their homelessness. That doesn't mean that we got them into permanently subsidized housing. Some have gotten rent subsidies. Some have participated in the Homeward Bound program. And absolutely some have ended up back out on the streets again. We're not going to be perfect. It's not going to be 100%, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to do the best that we possibly can to get folks indoors, a safe place to sleep and take care of their basic necessities, and help them find a pathway towards resolving their homelessness.
And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Greg, who is joining us from Redwood City. Greg, good morning. You're on Forum.
Good morning. Thank you for the conversation. I volunteer quite a bit at Glide, and I noticed that, for quite a while, it's the same clients coming in. And then, as I leave the Tenderloin, they are, sucking and driving on the street, high or drunk or whatever. And, I'm just wondering, we're perpetuating this cycle of entitlement, which, I don't have the answer for, how do you change someone's mentality about, taking from a system that is willing to give for the betterment of everyone? But I was just wondering, who's in charge of making sure that we're asking the people that are receiving the benefits that they're becoming productive parts of our community, or they're giving back in some way, shape, or form? These people that are using the services like Glide, I've never seen any of them volunteering.
Yeah, I mean, that's a complex question. But as far as not seeing people volunteering, I mean, I just want to say that as many people, and I understand your frustration, and I share it with people, seeing people come in and out of the system and being on the streets for years. But there are also our organizations that have many homeless or formerly homeless people volunteering. I was just down at Mother Brown's in the Bayview the other day, and 2 of the people who were preparing meals for folks were, one was homeless and one was formerly homeless. Community Housing Partnership, over half of their staff working there are formerly homeless individuals. Who, many of them used to be clients and end up working for the organization. So I think that there has been efforts to engage homeless people in giving back. But I also want to maybe reframe the problem a little bit, if I can, is that oftentimes I hear people talking about homelessness as individuals sort of failing to fit into the system. And I really just see it as the system failing to meet the needs of individuals. And, you know, homelessness as a problem really started in 1978 when HUD stopped investing in affordable housing. The HUD budget today is 20% of what it was in 1978. We spend about $46 billion a year on the HUD budget, but the mortgage interest tax deduction is over $70 billion a year and only is benefits about a third of Americans, many of whom are upper income. So when our federal government stopped investing in low-income housing is when we saw this increase in homelessness and all of the devastation that goes along with it, the mental health issue, this is the substance abuse, the cycling in and out of programs and really abject poverty, I directly connect to our federal government's failure to maintain a sensible housing policy.
Well, speaking of the federal government's failures and HUD, do you have any thoughts about Ben Carson being now in charge of HUD?
Well, you know, I don't know Mr. Carson, and I know that he does not have experience working in this space directly, but I also know—
None.
I do know that there are some amazing people who are working at HUD who have been working on these issues for years that are going to continue to work at HUD. I have great faith in them and their ability to continue along this path that, again, I want to remind folks in many ways was started under George Bush when Phil Mangano was the director of the Interagency Council on U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. And I'm hopeful that these programs are going to continue because you know, Mr. Trump speaks, you know, talks about business and about success and about metrics and wanting to, you know, to be successful. And HUD has been very successful in this particular area. And I hope that that Ben Carson will recognize that and not knock us off, knock the country off of what I think has been a pretty positive trajectory around homelessness.
Let me get local with you for a moment again. Can you talk about the downtown streets program here?
The nonprofit organization?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know them well, but I think it's a great model. I've seen models like this be very successful in New York. I'm really excited that groups,
what are they doing to get people off of homelessness?
Yeah, so what they're doing is engaging people in employment, getting them to help clean up the streets in neighborhoods, and then helping them get into SROs or find ways to exit homelessness. Taking it to the streets is another program that provides housing for transition-aged youth that does the same basic model. They work cleaning up the streets, and they work keeping Haight-Ashbury neighborhood safe and clean. And then in exchange, they get housing and social services provided to them. I think these are great models. When people are able to work and are ready to do that, it's great to be able to connect some type of employment activity with housing.
How much is San Francisco connected to these models?
Well, I think very. I mean, they're certainly Taking It to the Streets is a organization that we contract with. Also, Community Housing Partnership, which not only provides housing to folks, but they also have a social enterprise that hires homeless and formerly homeless people into jobs. There are many programs that we're engaged in, and the city has a very robust workforce development program. I work closely with their director and to help folks who are, again, wanting to get back into the workplace, get connected to some of these programs.
More of your calls. We will connect with Todd. You're on. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I first want to say I wish I shared the positive sentiment of the speaker today about Ben Carlson's nomination to the head of HUD. I think things are going to get worse. But anyway, I don't want to vacillate too much on that. I guess my comment was just kind of piggybacked on the last caller about the sense of entitlement in the city. It was kind of taking me back when I heard other people's comments and questions about, you know, zero tolerance on begging and things like that, and opening a mission, a shop in the Mission on 14th and Mission, and having a homeless problem. I think it's, you know, it's on the backs of people who are moving here and opening businesses in particular to do due diligence and learn the history of that neighborhood. I mean, 12 years ago, you wouldn't have walked down 14th and Mission most likely, and let alone open a business there. So I think there's been great improvement, particularly in the homeless situation. It's a city that's always going to have a homeless problem. That's just a fact. And whether or not you want to live here, you're going to have to deal with that to some degree. And it's just, it's amazing when you hear people complain about things like this, you know, less fortunate people. Yeah, some of them probably are criminals, but the majority of them, I probably would say, aren't. You know, and not even mentally ill for that matter. They're just, this is the most expensive city in the country, and if we don't provide people housing, that's what's going to happen. You know, and it's gotten better. I think it has gotten a lot better. Crime has gotten a lot better. You know, but it's just amazing. Like, people move to these neighborhoods and open up a business, and then complain about, you know, the people who've been there way before they were.
Yeah, Todd, I appreciate your call, and you're giving a much more positive view of it. I want to read a couple more comments from listeners. This is Patty, who says, I'm a 60-year-old female, was out of work 3 of the last 6 years due to an accident. I lost the apartment I had lived in for 9 years. I was staying in my office and showering at the gym for months because my credit was trashed. I now have a rented room, but it's very hard not to have a place of my own. And Eric says, one of the common complaints I read about at tent encampments are human feces and needles. Instead of paying public works to clean up a mess it's already made, I'd rather my tax dollars be spent to rent a porta potty and hang a sharps box on a light post nearby. This seems like a lower cost and kinder method that also benefits the people with homes and businesses nearby. And one more comment from a listener says, I applaud your guest for his courage in taking on this difficult job. And indeed, Jeff, thank you for giving us this progress report. It is a difficult job, but stay in there. Hang tight. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Jeff Kaczynski, again, spent the hour with us, director of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing for the City and County of San Francisco. You can continue this online, and we encourage you to do so by going to kqed.org/forum. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Judy Campbell. Our engineers are Katie McMurrin and Danny Bringer. Engagement editor is Amanda Stupai. We get online support from Amanda Font. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Joanne Wallace. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.